Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 14th of May. Wisconsin Museums Week started this weekend. It continues for the next week, and museums all over the state. You would be amazed to know how many museums there are. It's just, I have a list of them here that are participating, and it's just all over the state, tons of museums. We love museums. And we're going to be talking about the extent of Wisconsin Museum Week, all the special classes that will take place, how you find information about the museum that's close to you. We have three guests with us who represent the breadth and depth of museums in the state of Wisconsin. And we'll be asking you to call us with your thoughts about the museums that you really love in your part of the state and why you think everybody should go to them. And it's a good thing to do, and it's a great thing to celebrate. We have three guests with us during the course of this hour. Joanne Klusendorf is director of the Weiss Earth Science Museum that is located in the Fox Valley, and she actually is the founding director of that museum, the state's official mineralogical museum. She's a native of Milwaukee, got her PhD in geology from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's been a museum curator and educator, consulted for the National Park Service, taught at the university level, and conducted geological research in Wisconsin, across the United States, and in other countries as well. And she is currently the president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. Joanne, thank you so much for being with us, and happy Museum Week to you.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. Thank you for highlighting museums this week. It's wonderful to get this kind of coverage.
Well, we're happy to do so. They are great places, and I was amazed how many there are. When I looked at the list, Joanne, yeah. I was just dumbfounded. There are all kinds of museums.
Oh, there are. We have about 350 museums in the state, believe it or not, and that doesn't include historic sites and places that don't have an actual collection. So with that, we have about 600 sites. So it's truly amazing. And by the way, about 30, almost 40% of tourists in Wisconsin visit a museum when they're here. So it's an important piece of our economy.
It sure is. Also joining us, Brett Labello, curator of education at the Civil War Museum. I am embarrassed to say that I have not yet been there. I can't believe it. I've lived here all these years, but I will soon be there. And we've talked about taking a group of listeners to that Civil War Museum in Kenosha, which gets very, very high marks from all associated with history of the Civil War. The Civil War Museum is one of three museums collectively known as the Kenosha Public Museums, and Brett was, prior to his position at the Civil War Museum, he was museum educator at the Levine Museum of the New South in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the Logan Museum of Anthropology at Beloit College. He has a master's in history and a museum study certificate from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and is a member of the Wisconsin Federation of Museum Board. Brett, hello. Forgive me for not having been there. I promise I will be there. Actually, I have a vacation coming up. I'm going to come down during that vacation. I hear wonderful, wonderful things about your museum.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me on, and thanks for the great words about the museum. We'll definitely have to have you come down pretty soon. We're only a pretty new museum. We've only been open since 2008, so I think I can give you a pass.
Okay, thank you. And we'll hear more about what is there during the course of this hour. Also joining us is Graham Reed. Graham was born in Scotland, and he has a master's degree that he received from Indiana State University with 19 years' experience in arts management, curatorial work. He is now the assistant director at the Museum of Wisconsin Art. He previously worked at the John Michael Kohler Art Center in Sheboygan, the Art Museum of Greater Lafayette, Indiana, and the Swope Art Museum in Terre Haute, Indiana. He has curated over 120 group and solo exhibitions, as well as worked on the development and installation of institutional collections, and is an experienced judge as well. And thank you so much, Graham, for being with us. Hi.
Hi, this is Graham Reed at the Museum of Wisconsin Art.
Hello, Graham. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's start with you, Joanne. Give us an idea of the breadth of the celebrations this week and how museums will mark Wisconsin Museums Week. Good admission prices? Maybe some might be free. Classes going on? What's happening?
There is everything going on. It's amazing. You know, the International Museum Day started in 1977, and it's usually held around the middle of May. And in 2006, the Wisconsin Federation of Museums decided we were going to celebrate Wisconsin museums, and we have been doing that every year since. And every year we tend to have a few more museums that take part. And this year we have so many that are offering free admission. And I don't want to step on Brett's toes, but I know they're doing some special classes there. I think something about Walt Whitman that sounded really wonderful. There is genealogy classes going on at some of the places. There are special exhibits. Olbrich Gardens in Madison has lots going on. I can't tell you how many different things are going on. There are special exhibits that are opening, such as at the Wisconsin Historical Society in Madison. The Wisconsin Cranberry Discovery Center has reduced admissions this week. The Wisconsin Veterans Museum has a new exhibit called Not at Ease, which are highlighting different veteran print projects.
Mm.
And up in Door County, the Maritime Museum has a special exhibit coming in called Pirates. Pirates. You can tell I'm a mineralogy person. Pirates. Oh, well, once at the Weiser Science Museum a couple years ago, we did have an exhibit called Pirates of the Caribbean. So I think I get a little bit of a pass there.
We appreciate your comments. It's fun.
But all I can suggest to people is visit our website, the Wisconsin Federation of Museums website, which is www.wisconsinmuseums.org. And you can just Google in Wisconsin Museums and you'll find our website, too. And go to the menu and click Wisconsin Museums Week. And when you get there, you can click on another button that actually shows you the whole list of the different venues in the state that are offering something special in celebration of Museums Week.
Great. Brett, let's go to you for a moment. Please tell us about all that we can find at the Civil War Museum in Kenosha. And also, what it's like to work in a museum like that, how you chose that as your work.
Well, there's a lot coming up. There's a lot going on down here in Kenosha for International Museums Week. First of all, what we're doing at the museum here is that we are staying open from 5 o'clock until 8 o'clock. Typically, we do close at 5. So for all three museums down here, the Kenosha Public Museum, the Civil War Museum, and the Dinosaur Museum, we will be open till 8. At the DDM, we'll be having flashlight tours, which are good for all ages. At the Kenosha Public Museum, they'll also be playing games from around the world. At this museum, we're pretty much waiving our admission rate at the Civil War Museum. So that's what we're doing here. And how did I get into this field? That's a great question. I never actually know how to answer that one. As a historian, I always sort of liked going to museums and historic sites. So it was one of those things where it's like, hey, if I like doing it, why don't I just try and see if I can get a job here? And I don't know how I've managed to get positions at a couple really awesome museums. And it's a really cool gig.
Well, and it's also such a great time to be a part of a Civil War museum, isn't it?
Yeah, right now we've got with all the sesquicentennial anniversaries coming through the pipe, we're seeing a lot of visitors come through here that typically wouldn't necessarily think about the Civil War and how it affects Wisconsin and the six upper Midwestern states that we focus on. And so we do see a lot of new faces, people that aren't Civil War buffs, but we also see a lot of people that are pretty interested in it, and it's always cool and interesting to have some of these great conversations with different people that come through our doors.
I'm sure it is. And Graham, give us an overview of the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend.
Sure. We were actually founded just over 50 years ago in 1961 to actually collect the work of an academic realist painter called Karl von Mahr, who was actually born in Milwaukee but spent most of his career in Germany. And then really the current iteration of the museum really began in the mid-'80s when Tom Lidke, the current director, realized that there was really no single institution in the state that was focusing exclusively on Wisconsin art. And there was also kind of a national movement beginning that where kind of smaller, medium-sized institutions throughout the country realized that they couldn't really compete with, you know, the big museum in the state. And I think most states have kind of a big museum. You know, obviously in Wisconsin, it's the Milwaukee Art Museum is kind of the big guy. And so from about 88 to 98, Tom kind of very quietly and judiciously started putting together the early Wisconsin collection. And this was really at a time when regional art was kind of very much considered secondary on the national scene. And we unveiled the early Wisconsin collection in 1998 on the state's sesquicentennial. And then at that point, we were the West Bend Art Museum. And then in 2007, we changed our name to the Museum of Wisconsin Art because it really more accurately reflected who we are and what we do. At that point, the collection, I kind of call it the three-legged stool, the collection was all Wisconsin-focused. And over the last 24 years, actually, we've been building the Wisconsin Art Archive. So if anybody's ever going to do any research on Wisconsin art, really we should be the kind of first port of call because we've got over 9,000 files, books, catalogs, you name it. And we actually just launched that online last year, so people can go through our website and they can kind of do some research there, but what obviously with 9,000 files of varying sizes, there's no way that we could ever kind of put everything online. But what it'll tell you is is it a small, medium, or large file, and what we have here, so you can make the visit to West Bend. And then since about 2005, I've been here since 2003, since about 2005, all of our exhibitions have been exclusively focused on Wisconsin art. So whether you come and see the Karl von Mahr work, whether you come and see one of our temporary exhibitions, and those vary also. Some of them involve contemporary Wisconsin artists, and then we also put together exhibitions that focus on the history of Wisconsin art, more historical artists or historical subjects. And we're actually at an incredibly exciting time in our history because about 6 weeks ago we actually started construction on a brand new custom-built facility.
Oh.
And it's going to be about 50% bigger than our current location. It's going to be just about 33,000 square feet. It's going to be, from a location point of view, for people coming from anywhere in the state to find us. I mean, right now we're kind of nestled in just kind of on the south side of downtown West Bend, but we're actually going to be right in the heart of downtown West Bend, right on Highway 33. And so for many of the listeners listening in, if you basically get yourself to Highway 33, no matter what part of the state you're coming from, you will not be able to miss us. We've got a terrific new building designed by Jim Shields of HGA Architects in Milwaukee. And it's really just going to, obviously, the amount of traffic, I think probably about 95% of the traffic that goes past the current building is probably in-town traffic, whereas this is going to just have a huge impact on us because so much of the traffic just going through town on Highway 33 will be going right past our front door.
Very nice.
So, yeah, we're probably scheduled to open sometime early next spring. They're talking about having substantial completion done with our project by about Thanksgiving, but then, of course, we've got to move the entire museum from one location to another, which it's only about half a mile, so that's one of the saving graces, is we're not moving it miles and miles. It's only about half a mile.
Right. Very, very nice. Joanne, give us a feel for where Wisconsin stands in terms of the number of museums and quality of museums as a state.
We actually have a large variety of museums compared to some other states in the Midwest in particular, which is a good comparison. We have more historic sites than many other states within the area. And we tend to revere our history and our culture. And the only problem is when it comes to funding from the government, we're actually way down at the bottom of the list. And that's too bad, because actually it turns out that travelers come to a place, and museums, historic sites, and other cultural attractions actually spend more money than other kinds of tourists, about a third more, and they stay about 50% longer, so that there's more heads and beds, you know, for the hotels. And so we would urge state and local and municipal governments to actually think more about the economic impact of museums on their area. I mean, it's really pretty phenomenal. Across the country, the return on investment in museums ranges everywhere from times 3 to times 15, the amount of money spent on cultural institutions. So you really get a huge return on investment for the rest of the community. And, you know, it's like I said, Wisconsin is very good about preserving its history and promoting its art and, making sure that we provide good learning experiences and science and things like that to our communities. So we need to now make sure that these institutions, though, stay healthy.
Right. I don't think that we have had a chance to hear you talk about the Earth Science Museum in the Fox Valley.
No, I noticed that. Let
please,
me tell you.
Please do, yes.
We actually turned 10 this year. We opened in 2002. And we are the official mineralogical museum, and just as I was mentioning about support, that's just a title. We get no money from the state or, counties or anything like that. Even though we're on a UW campus, one of the college's campuses, we don't get any university money either. We're all totally self-supporting, so we have to generate our own income. It is a very cool place to visit. We see about 10,000-11,000 school children every year, and we all the way from pre-K through college, and they get wonderful individualized guided tours. We try to conform exactly with the curriculum that teachers are teaching at the time, so we can tailor make a tour for their classes. We also have had visitors from all 50 states and from all continents except Antarctica. And as I was reminded recently, that one of the visitors I know about had actually been to Antarctica, though. So that's the other thing to remember, is that museums really bring in a diversity of people to communities. And the other thing is that they are an important part of decisions that are made by businesses when they're thinking about relocating to a community. It's the lifestyle quality that they're looking for. So the Weiser Science Museum offers lots of interesting stuff. Our mission is to provide this kind of science education. Our goal is to actually spark curiosity in our visitors, certainly children, but also adults, that they get interested in the world around them, they get interested in science, and kids might even think about pursuing a scientific career. Nationally, we're not doing that well within the international community when it comes to science and math, so everything we can do is really important to encourage that. So you can come to the Weiser Science Museum and actually make an earthquake, and you actually learn physics when you do it. Don't tell them, though. So it was a wonderful opportunity when I was approached about becoming the founding director, because I actually got to design the museum.
Oh, you did?
Yes,
great.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. And one of the things that I really did, because of the consulting I had done with museums elsewhere prior to this, is I tried to make all the text in the museum something that was understandable by somebody with a high school education. I didn't want to make parents feel uncomfortable when their kids asked them questions. So the information is there. It's pretty understandable, and it's a nice family learning opportunity with lots of interactive, hands-on, fun stuff to do that you can actually learn along with your children. So it's really a lot of fun.
This week is Wisconsin Museums Week. It started over the weekend and it continues through this week. Check museums close to you unless you want to take a road trip. And if you go to our Facebook page, the Kathleen Dunn Show, there's a link to all that's going on in museums all over the state. And I got to tell you, it is very, very extensive. Be your interest in art, the Museum of Art in West Bend, or the Civil War Museum in Kenosha, the Earth Science Museum in Fox Valley, and many, many other museums all over the state of Wisconsin. It's the week to go if you're looking for special classes or if you're looking for special admission prices. There are many museums here. Here's our phone number. If you'd like to highlight one that's close to you, too, or a favorite that you have, we'd love to hear from you today. Or if you have questions of our guest about the museums in the state or about the museums that they are affiliated with, our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. 655, or you can send an email, talk@wpr.org, or go to our Facebook page and leave a little message. That would be great. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome phone calls for our guests, and we have three of them today. Joanne Klusendorf is director of the Weiss Earth Science Museum in the Fox Valley, Brett Labello, educator at the Civil War Museum in Kenosha, and Graham Reed, assistant director of the Museum of Wisconsin Art, which will have a new location, a brand new building in the fall. You can find them in West Bend. 800-486-8655 is our number. Or the email is talk@wpr.org. Matt in Green Bay is our first caller. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I'm a curator of education at the Neville Public Museum in Green Bay.
Oh.
Which is one of our larger, or what they would call a mid-sized museum of art, history, and science. And we're going to be turning 100 here soon in the next few years. But my question has to do with the role of educators in museums. I'd like your guests to talk a little bit more about their role in the museum, because people look at education as something that is, you know, sort of inherent in museums, but there is a lot of work that goes behind the scenes with that.
Yes, and before you go, let me ask if you have special events going on this week at Neville Public Museum.
We have an exhibit that is opening up at the end of the week. It's called Football, the Science, or it's Football, the Exhibit, and it's from University of Arkansas. It's a two-gallery, all-hands-on interactive exhibit that will be opening up. And it's, you know, one of the things we're finding a lot more is that people want to see more interactive exhibits.
Yes. Why is that, Matt? And I want everybody to talk about the interactive nature of exhibits. It's something that we didn't do very much of at all when I was a kid going to museums, and now it's omnipresent.
Yeah, I think it's because we've become an interactive culture and society. I mean, any day now, any day you can ask any question, practically any question, and not only get the answer to it. I mean, last night, my mother was looking for piano music, and, you know, as at a museum, we certainly have piano and sheet music in our collection, but I just went ahead and, out of curiosity, looked it up on the Internet and found the exact sheet music she was looking for within a matter of seconds.
Hmm.
So we've become a really interactive culture.
Brett, let's go to you on this one, the role of an educator at the Civil War Museum.
Well, the role of an educator is actually really cool, too, because it's like a little bit of everything. So down here I work with the exhibiting collections teams. I'm also working with the public and with students and adults that are coming in there. Basically, one of my big job tenets, I guess, is to find out what the public thinks about the Civil War and be able to answer their questions and maybe develop some programs that can sort of enhance their knowledge about the Civil War. But to do that, you need to know, understand who they are. And that's one of the big roles I think an educator plays is understanding who the people are that are coming through the door and really trying to focus on what they know and what they don't know and giving them a little bit more information. That's one of the things, one of the reasons that actually drove me from Charlotte, North Carolina up here was I realized when I was talking to folks down there that they didn't even know that Wisconsin was a state during the Civil War.
Oh, my goodness. Are you serious?
Exactly. And
whoa.
That's the reason I said, hey, you know, if people don't even think of the Civil War as something that even impacted Wisconsin, then maybe there's a lot of work to do here in getting the word out about Wisconsin's pretty nice role in the Civil War.
There's so much information. I know there's been a focus by the Historical Society on those who fought in the war and those who were affected by the war. There were a lot of diaries kept and a lot of personal stories, aren't there?
Exactly. That's the one thing that we do really well at this museum down here in Kenosha, is that we present those personal stories. Obviously, we don't have a battlefield. There was no Battle of Lake Michigan or anything like that by us here. So what we try and do is tell the story of the home front and their connections to the soldiers at the battlefront.
Mm-hmm.
So we try and tell that story, and it's really using a lot of those primary sources, those diaries, those letters, those different things, and we try and make it a little bit more engaging and relevant to people today.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to you, Matt, in Green Bay. Is that a good way for us to learn history? And if so, is it more helpful at a certain age than at another to really hear those personal stories, do you think?
Boy, there's a lot that you had in that question. Well, one of the things that you can find a lot on the Internet about history, and you can find those things, but the one thing that you can't find on the Internet is that actual object that you can see. And, for example, we just took down recently an exhibit that was on the War of 1812 here, and we have a letter that the fourth president of the United States, John Adams, sent to someone here in Green Bay. And so you can actually see a real John Adams letter and see his handwriting and the color of ink he used. And it's right there in front of you. And that's what I hear over and over again from people is, you know, that you have those objects that are being saved and even being preserved today.
Mm-hmm.
I speak with school groups a lot, and when I do, the first thing I do is I say, so what is a museum for? And they often say, to educate you. And I pull out a cell phone from my pocket, and I say, well, what is this? And they all say, a cell phone. And I said, yes, but if you give it to a museum 100 years from now, it will be in a case, and you will be with your great-great-granddaughter, and she'll be asking you, what is that?
Oh, no.
You know, and you'll say, I think it's a cell phone. I haven't seen one of those in around. And she'll say, well, really, you know, you carried that big thing around with you all the time?
Thanks, Matt, very much. I'm glad you were listening. It is true, the objects can be objects of wonder at times, no doubt about it. Margot in River Falls. Hi, Margot.
Hi. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Platform Mining Museum. It's a wonderful small museum. It has many zinc and lead mine displays from local Indian women who used to pick up the lead and make jewelry out of it. And there are displays all around the area on zinc mining and lead mining. You can go down into the museum, into the mine, and actually see how the lead miners and the zinc miners mined back at the beginning, and then there's a transitions up to more modern days, up to the 1940s and 50s. The displays change every year. There's a train that you can ride around the land on, which is always fun for the children. And the last thing, because I know you have many people to talk to, on the 4th of July, the museum is open to the public for free. You can go on the train rides. There's food there. There's free tours. There's a band that plays all afternoon. And one of my favorite things is they have a man who plays the saw.
Oh,
and it's such an incredible, and he's wonderful at it. And that's it, because it's wonderful. And I spent my life, many years in Platteville. And the thing that I miss the most is the mining museum. I just love that place.
Oh, you've sold it. You've really sold it. Thank you, Margo.
Oh, thank you. I love the place.
I can
like
tell.
I even wrote a play that we produce down in the mine. And it with a harpist and a flutist and these children all dressed up as miners, it was unbelievably wonderful. And I think I produced a play 27 times. I think it was 27 times. And the children always loved the history of the mine.
So this play was about the mine?
Yes, it was about the beginning mining, right, in the area.
Oh, thank you, Margot. I'm glad you were listening. Thank you so much for your call.
I am too. And yeah. I love you on the radio in the morning. I just love your program.
Thanks, Margot. Nick asks in an email, let's give this one to you, Graham. We're looking for Wisconsin museums or exhibitions related to the book arts, handmade books, artist books, also the mechanical age and steampunk themes. Any ideas where to go? Do you have any of that in West Bend?
No, not really, but, well, actually, thinking about steampunk, probably about the only thing I can think of that would really tie into that is, and many of your listeners will be familiar with Owen Gromey, who was probably the preeminent bird artist here in the state. And he did many, many, many paintings, but he only did one mechanical duck decoy, and we have that. And it looks like something that Leonardo would have come up with. It's literally handmade. You can the body of the goose is paper mache, and it kind of comes off, and you can kind of see all the guts inside. But, I mean, he literally carved this thing from wood and applied the feathers and nailed them into place. And theoretically, you'd be able to pull the string, and the bird's wings would flap, although I've never done it because I think the string would probably snap. But that's probably the kind of most steampunky thing we have. But if I could just go back to a couple of the other issues that have been raised here in terms of, one of them was economic development. One of the things we consciously decided not to do with our new building was put a cafe or a restaurant in there.
Oh.
There's a couple of reasons for that. One, we would have had to increase the square footage of the entire building to accommodate that. But the other thing is, it's not our business. We are a museum, and that is the primary role that we play. But the other thing is, where we're located, we're going to be in right downtown in West Bend. Literally a stone's throw from our front door, you would be able to go to various bars and restaurants, coffee shops, and things like that. So we've had an awful lot of very positive response from the community in terms of that move. I mean, if you're going to come down and visit us from Fond du Lac or come up from Milwaukee, you know, you're going to come up, you're going to visit the museum, and then you're going to be, oh, well, we're going to go and get something to eat. And we'll be able to say, well, you can go right here, you can go right here. It's very much within walking distance. You don't have to worry about parking. So certainly in terms of the economic development that we can possibly bring to West Bend, it will probably not be insignificant. Just going back to also the Civil War, we actually have this marvelous, and the people don't know that Wisconsin was heavily involved in the Civil War. We have a marvelous portrait that was done actually by a Scottish itinerant artist called Alexander Marquis, and it's of John Wales Jefferson, who is actually Thomas Jefferson's grandson.
Oh my.
On the Sally Hemings side of the family tree.
Oh.
And it's a kind of remarkable picture because he fought for Wisconsin during the Civil War. I think he was a colonel. But the picture was never finished. It's probably about 85% finished. So it's kind of got this terrific backstory. It was done by an immigrant artist to the States. But here he is, the grandson of the third president of the United States. And then finally, just to talk about the education here. I mean, I think it's undeniable nowadays that we live in a very visual culture. And, you know, we obviously do art classes for all age levels here. One of the things we've also been getting involved in lately, and I think this is kind of growing, is museums are across the country realize that education has to take on many shapes and forms and really respond to what's happening nationally. We are very much involved with the SPARK program, which is a program specifically designed for people with Alzheimer's and memory loss. And so they come into the museum, they discuss a work of art, and actually we've also just started actually hands-on projects. But I was just remembering with the cell phone comment I think Brett made, you know, you can pull up, you know, if you've got the right phone, you can pull up any museum's website and you can look at images on your phone. But that's what about maybe a 3x5 or a 2.5x4 inch screen. One of the major paintings we have in the museum is 14 feet tall by 24 feet wide.
Whoa!
And You can pull up images on a cell phone. You can pull them up on a laptop or a tablet or anything, but nothing will ever really beat that physical experience of walking into a building and seeing the real thing right there in front of you. Because, you know, museums, by and large, we house completely unique objects. And I think that's what we can offer, is that we live in an age of kind of mass production and digital images. But there's something about walking in and seeing a painting that is, you know, 170 years old, or an object that's object from the Civil War. Or one of the things we're going to be having in the new building is we are going to have a gallery dedicated to kind of Native American art here in the state. So you will to literally go from the earliest art that was created in the state right through to work that's being made today. And, you know, that's just the great thing about museums, is to be able to come in and see that range of objects, see that, have that range of experience in one place. And when you think about it, museums are still an incredibly good value. I mean, you can, most of them have free days or reduced admission days. You could take a whole family to a museum for relatively little money, and you're always going to be seeing top quality things. It's not like you could be going to, I don't mean to bash on sports here, but you could go to a sporting event and it could just be the, you know, a really lousy game. you go to a museum and you're guaranteed to see things that you could not see anywhere else, and you're going to see some of the best objects you could see anywhere in the world.
Yeah, it's, you've sold us on that. That's great.
Can I make a comment about the education that came up before?
Of course.
I think one of the important things about museum is, certainly the objects. I mean, you can come to the Weiser Science Museum and you can touch a dinosaur bone that a dinosaur that lived 67 million years ago, you know. And there's nothing that can make the hair on the back of your neck stand up more than that. But it's also the interpretation and the backstories that go along with the objects. Because you have to, I think, a lot of times help people see even more the significance of objects. And it's something that museum educators do so well, because it's not just like reading a textbook, which is what we think of a lot of times when we think of education, you know, having a lecture or reading a text, but it's actually engaging people in the backstory so that they're interested in learning more about the objects and about the themes. And I think that's what museum educators truly love to do. I mean, you can't stop me talking about rocks and fossils. And where else can people have that kind of inspiration and exposure than a museum?
Yes. And hearing our expert guests and their great enthusiasm and knowledge talk about their museums, too. This is a great hour. Joanne Klusendorf, director of the Weiss Earth Science Museum at UW Fox Valley, president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. Brett Labello, educator at the Civil War Museum in Kenosha. Brett is the curator of education at that museum. And Graham Reed, assistant director of the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. Here's our phone number. May I tell you, please, if you go to our Facebook page, you'll get a link that's directed to this fabulous week, Wisconsin Museums Week, which kicked off over the weekend and is taking place all this week. There are events going on in museums all over the fine state of Wisconsin, so please have a look. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Our phone number, and Jim, thanks very much. Oh, no, we have to get you, Jim. Thanks very much for joining us in all of our guests, and for those who would like to join us, our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to an email that's come in, and then we'll return to your many phone calls. Our lines are jammed. It's great. Great to see interest in this, huh? This is from Gary in Iron River. I do not understand the logic of Joanne, so this goes to you, Joanne, when she says Wisconsin has more museums and more historical markers than many other similar states, but we have lower government funding. Without knowing the facts, I would conclude that private citizens, wealthy and not wealthy, and corporations are stepping up to fund these museums and monuments, which I view is good, and our museum professionals are managing to do more with less, which I also view as good. Help me understand this better.
Well, I was making a comparison to other states in our region, and the facts are that Wisconsin, I'm not sure if it's the lowest government-supported, but it is certainly down there. And it is the idea that most of the other states have is that museums and other kinds of cultural, historical attractions actually bring in a large amount of money into the various communities, and they see it as a benefit to provide support to these attractions so that they benefit from the visitorship that comes to them. It is not a waste of government money if you're seeing something like 3 to 15 times the return on your investment. And unfortunately, private donations are not at their height at all. In fact, they have dropped off considerably from 2008 with the recession. And unfortunately, it's not the kind of thing that all communities can depend upon. You don't have a local donors who are interested. You don't have corporate sponsorship because there aren't the corporations locally. And I will add one more thing to the mix, and that is a lot of local or national corporations have been taken over by international companies. And these international companies actually don't even understand what you're talking about when you ask them for a donation, because the countries they come from, the actual nations, support their cultural institutions.
Interesting. Well, I was wondering, I just went to Washington a couple weeks ago, and I know that the initial money for the Smithsonian came from some British fellow whose name was Smith something or other. Thank you, some years ago. But I'm wondering, how do we keep all of those fantastic museums, and what a pleasure it is, I must add, most would agree, to walk into those museums and go from one to another and have no admission fees at all. It's just marvelous. How do we keep those going admission-free? Do we spend tax dollars on that?
Yeah, there are tax dollars spent on that. The government does support them. However, there is also corporate and private sponsorship of, you know, galleries and exhibits and things like that. But basically, the federal government supports it certainly through tax dollars, and that is why they're free, because the government, it says, you're paid for it, so you should be able to see it.
Yeah. Jim in Bayfield, our next caller. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you? Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
This is pretty timely for me. I'm actually working up my solar-powered trailer on a traveling exhibit, and I had a question. First, let me tell you what I do. I've spent the last 10 years designing an exhibit that travels around much of the state to nature centers, museums, and galleries. It's called Our Shared Planet. But my question was, in my dilemma is now getting it out to venues and breaking it into museums, and I was wondering if there's a list or if your guests have any suggestions on contacts for museums within the state and throughout the nation, too, actually, to get the exhibit out there.
And, Jim, tell me a little more what's in the exhibit.
Well, the exhibit, it's a traveling environmental awareness exhibit, and it's a number of life-size wildlife wood sculptures that I've created. They're highly detailed and painted when they're done, and I've previously done a bunch of work when I was living in Alaska for the Alaska Sea Life Center for their exhibits, but decided to create this with my concerns about the environment around the world, to create this exhibit to get out and travel around. And we've had it here at the Northern Great Lakes Visitor Center. It's been at the Hartley Nature Center and at the International Wolf Center. And then it was also in the rotunda of the Wisconsin State Capitol. But I really need to get the word out or find contacts for museums to get it out there.
Joanne.
Yeah, well, you can certainly visit WisconsinMuseums.org for a list of our member museums for the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. There are also, I hate to refer people to Wikipedia, but there are lists of various state museums on Wikipedia. The one for Wisconsin is really quite extensive, quite comprehensive. So, And then there are also organizations. Unfortunately, the Wisconsin Federation of Museums doesn't really include nature centers, but there are organizations that, you know, are professional organizations for them. And my guess is that's something else that you could look up online, you know, Wisconsin Nature Centers, and see if you can find a listing like that. Most of these things do include contact information. You can kind of see what they're about by looking up their websites, you know.
Thank you, Jim, so much. Isn't it interesting what people do with their lives?
It is.
I mean, that's very interesting. Rich in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. You know my motto, welcome to Wisconsin, the heart of America's heartland. So I want to mention two museums in this area of the state. The Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum in Wausau right now has two exhibits going. One is 50 years of NASA art, National Aeronautics and Space Administration art. They have their art on loan through June 17th. And then also Mary Grand Prey's Carnival of Animals art is there for the younger set. She's famous for her illustrations in all of the Harry Potter books. The other museum is the Logging Museum in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, which is Wisconsin's truly authentic logging museum site, and it's open Memorial Day through Labor Day, so you have to time your visits there either on weekends or during the summer hours. One other thing we mentioned in this household is if you do go to the Rhinelander Logging Museum and you are an active family, you can go on the Bearskin Trail between Highway K and Minocqua, a bicycle and snowmobiling trail, and on all of Wisconsin's bike trails. Along the way, there are markers, and on the Bearskin Trail, there are markers about logging and railroading and what was happening here in the late 19th century. So, the man who said private money is good, all money is good, but I second your guest's opinion that we need private and public money to promote Wisconsin, the heart of America's heartland. Thank you.
All right, Rich. Oh, everybody's just really good today. You're thinking on this Monday morning. Joanne, you want to respond to that?
What more could I say? No, Rich has got it right. And, you know, we have a lot to be proud of here in Wisconsin, and I think that Wisconsinites are really tied to our history and our land. I mean, it's something that never leaves you. I lived out of state for a while, and I could not wait to get back, and I'm at home here. You know, this is it, and it's the geology, it's the history, it's the culture. It's all these things wrapped up together that make Wisconsin what it is. And the fact that, you know, we have people that are so dedicated to the museum profession that want to preserve and to promote, you know, our wonderful diversity and culture and history. Uh-huh. And I want to put out one plea. If you've got some spare time and you live anywhere near a museum or a historical society, any place like that, volunteer, okay, because museums really rely on volunteers because of that funding issue, for one thing. But also, we find just a huge amount of resource and skill that is out there. And when people come to volunteer, we are just the better for it.
Yeah. One more call. We're running short on time. Anne in Madison. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I am the museum educator at the University of Wisconsin Chazen Museum of Art.
Great.
And a couple of challenges for museum educators that we meet with joy are the opportunity to slow people down so that they can look. Sometimes I think I'm part of the slow looking movement, just parallel to the slow food movement. And one of those ways that we do that is with hands-on materials, which have been mentioned by your guests. Another is to meet people in the ways that they learn. Everybody's aptitudes are different, and so cross-disciplinary connections with the visual arts are very important to us. Sometimes it's music and art. Sometimes it's film and art. And on Thursday, we and a group of Madison poets have invited a dozen Wisconsin poets to come look at an exhibition of 21st and 20th century art glass and write a poem about it.
Oh, great.
So
I love that.
That will take place, and we're launching that as part of a program where poets are invited to come and do what's part of a great tradition, which is writing and describing artworks. We all know Ode on a Grecian Urn by Keats. Come to the Chazen on Thursday night at 7 o'clock, and you can get our local John Keats to
Wonderful.
Help you look a little more slowly.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you called. Thanks, Ann. Well, we're plumb out of time. Thank you for all of you for the work that you do, and here's to Wisconsin Museums Week. I hope the numbers increase, and long may you live. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to Joanne Klusendorf, director of the Weiss Earth Science Museum at the University of Wisconsin-Fox Valley, and president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums, Brett Labello, who is the curator of education at the Civil War Museum in Kenosha. Got to get there soon. And also our thanks to Graham Reed, assistant director of the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend, which gets a whole new home in downtown West Bend this fall. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Brett Jaspers for on-air production. Thanks for listening.